Listen to the voices of our world.
I have not met a Navajo who has become financial success mining uranium.
Every now and then, I dream that I went back into the mine, and that's what scares me now.
I have yet to see a lasting benefit to the Navajo communities where mining took place.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm Eleanor Ostrinsky, sitting in for Eileen Bott. Today, we'll speak with Mitchell Capitan and Larry King, two Navajo Indians who have been fighting against the reinstatement of uranium mining in their New Mexican communities. This is not the first time uranium's been mined on Navajo land, and it's not the first time that opposition's been voiced. But a Texas corporation claims that new mining technology is safe, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, a governmental agency, is turning a deaf ear and dismissing undisputed findings that mining will contaminate the desert community's only drinking water. Today's program is an indication that systematic elimination of the Native American has not ceased. In many towns, Columbus Day is celebrated with marching school bands and batons in the air. In New Mexico, people gather for a day of mourning, Native American Holocaust Remembrance Day. So let's look at history and find out what happened when the white man discovered America. Native Americans were called Indians after Columbus completely missed his mark of reaching India and discovered America. Tribes in eastern North America died of disease and clashes with new settlers in the colonies. Western tribes came under U.S. jurisdiction in 1848, when Mexico lost the war, as well as Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, Utah, Nevada, and California. Pioneers going west to claim land and fortune met with resistance. So in 1864, Kit Carson and the U.S. Army destroyed Navajo fields and livestock, rounded up thousands of starving Navajos, and marched them to Fort Sumner, 350 miles away. Slow walkers were killed, women were raped, and many froze to death. After the Navajo Long Walk, restrictions intensified as treaties were renegotiated. The reservations had limited water supplies and few opportunities for employment. In the 1940s, as the race for the creation for the first nuclear bomb intensified, Navajos were recruited to mine uranium with their bare hands on their own land. This happened again in the 70s and the 80s as the U.S. raced the Soviet Union to possess more nuclear weaponry. When the Cold War ended, the uranium market dropped. Navajos were offered money for burial of depleted uranium and radioactive waste. Cancer rates soared, lots of people died, poverty rose, and the U.S. government didn't deliver on its promise to clean up the environment. As the demand for energy rises, the politicians again promised the Navajos monetary relief in exchange for the development of energy resources on their land. And they don't mean creating solar power or harnessing the wind. The government is facilitating uranium mining again. The Eastern Navajo Diné against uranium mining was formed to counteract corporate and government pressures and to educate everyone about the long-term negative effects of the reinstatement of uranium mining. Mary Knoll's sister, Jean Fallon, and the Mary Knoll Office for Global Concerns invited two NDAO members to speak at the United Nations DPI NGO annual conference. I spoke with Mitchell Capitan and Larry King at the United Nations.
This is Mitchell Capitan. I'm from Crown Point, New Mexico, and I'm here on behalf of the Eastern Navajo Diné against uranium mining. We've been fighting this proposed uranium mining for 10 years, and we're trying to let the world know, you know, what we face in the United States to help us to fight against the aggression of the government and outside companies coming in to mine uranium.
My name is Larry King. I'm a Navajo from the community of Church Rock. I'd like to see an end to uranium mining activities, whether it be conventional mining or the so-called safe ISL mining, to stop those companies from coming into our area where our Navajo people are still being ravaged by cancer from past uranium mining legacies?
You know, I'm sure uranium can be mined, but not in a magnitude of what we're facing in our community, where it will destroy our aquifer, which is our only drinking water source. Crown Point is a desert area. We don't live where water is plentiful, and water is very sacred for our religion, for our tradition, and water is very important. You know, we use that underground water every day. You know, whenever there's no rain, all our water dams are all dried up, so people just have to reserve to the underground water. So water is very important in our community, especially what we have in Crown Point. Our water is located about 2,000 feet deep in the West Canyon Formation. And the uranium, what they're trying to get is just located right in that area too. And this is what we're worried about. And the mining company that's coming in say, we're not going to contaminate anything. This kind of mining can be done.
NRC is relied on the words of a company that say they are experienced, and also that their method, the in-situ leach mining, the ISL mining, they have proven it to be safe. The problem is Uranium Resource Incorporated, the parent company, have done some in-situ leach mining in Texas, but they did their in-situ leach mining in an aquifer that was already contaminated. And Hydro Resource Incorporated, the company that is proposing to do their ISL mining in our area, has never done any ISL mining, but they're relying on the experience of one person, Mark Pileza, and now they're saying that they're experienced. And another thing, they've never proven this method to be successful in working in an aquifer that is pristine water, restoring it to its natural state. And to say that they've proven their method is successful is totally false. And NRC is relying on the words of a company that is, to me, is lying to them, but they're being believed by the government. So therefore, I don't have trust in my government at all.
Now, your tribe has had a very, very long history with uranium mining. Can you describe what has happened?
Well, there has been a lot of uranium mining in the past history of the Navajo Nation back in the 1940s, especially during the World War II, when a lot of Navajos were told to help out mining uranium. And the government found some abundance of uranium in our reservation, and some of them were real shallow. So some company, I guess, came out and had the Navajos dig uranium out with no protection. They dug out the uranium with shovel. They rolled them out with wheelbarrows or train that could be pushed by hand. And a lot of our elderlies never knew, you know, the dangers of uranium. A lot of this waste product that came out from these old mines, a lot of our Navajo families used some of the rocks and the sand to build their homes, you know, like hogans. Hogans mainly made out of like mud and clay, you know, where you can mix it and just build a home with that. So some of the homes were made out of the waste product of the mines, and they were never told the dangers of that. And with the long years, it finally affected them, you know, through the poison of the kidney and cancer and birth defects and stuff like that. So that happened in the past, and it's a bad legacy of suffering, you know, for our Navajo people.
You're talking about birth defects, but actually we can go a lot further and say that many people have probably died from the effects of radiation.
I'm sure that's true, and I've seen a lot of our elderly start to have an illness years after you have worked with uranium. I handle uranium myself. You know, I work as a lab technician. Process uranium. It's the yellow cake itself. To me, I thought the only time the uranium is safe is when it's wet, when it's not a dust. But at times, we used to cook the uranium in ovens to find the actual weights of the uranium, what we're producing. At that time, I thought that was a dangerous thing for me to handle because the dust and things like that. And to testify to that, I used to work with a lady. She was my aide in the lab tech. And she used to handle the uranium ore for quite some time without any protective equipment, like apron or even a mask, you know, to protect her respiratory. And I noticed she passed away about 5 years later with a breast cancer. And she testified to me that I think that's the reason why, you know, she got that breast cancer quickly, and it took her within about 2 years. And it kind of, you know, make me think that, gosh, you know, something like that can happen to anybody just like that. And it's not good.
This is Larry again. On the safety issue, when we got hired, we were not informed of what uranium could do to you in the future. No safety meetings of any type. But while I was underground doing my job, the only time we knew there was a safety inspection coming on was when we were told to reroute some ventilation bags and close off certain sections where there was not enough ventilation. So we knew OSHA was coming on to do inspection. But as soon as they left, the bags were rerouted back to the way it was before. A lot of times I spent time in those unventilated areas where the radon levels were very, very high. People will probably say, well, why didn't he stay out of those unventilated areas? I needed my job. And if I said, no, I won't go in there, in that tunnel, because there's no air, I would have been out of a job. The reason why I had to go into some of these unventilated areas was to take measurements so the miners can receive their paychecks. They were paid by the footage, by how much they advance in each tunnel.
And they were using what to blast the earth?
Dynamite sticks blasted in a chain reaction. I remember putting in primers in one, dynamite and blasting caps in others, and helping these miners pack each hole that they drill in the face of the tunnel.
Were you scared?
No, not at the time. But if I were to do it all over again, I wouldn't. At the time, a lot of my coworkers, we went after the almighty dollar. But like I said, nobody told us about what effect it might have on us later on in the years. Every now and then, I dreamed that I went back into the mine. And that's what scares me now. I don't know if that's what you call nightmares or what.
Why does it scare you now?
I don't dream about cave-ins or disaster happening, but it just scares me. Just scares me. But I would never go back in.
What environmental threats does the Native American community face in your region? We'd like to know. Log on to the Voices of Our World webpage, www.maryknoll.org/voices. There's a spot there for your feedback. I'm Eleanor Ostrinsky, and you're listening to Voices of Our World. You can call us at 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARY-KNOLL.